This week on Pop of Culture, we do the show in eclipse glasses.
We're expecting anywhere from 150 to 200,000 non-users.
One thing that there's just not a lot of public knowledge about is how wildlife respond to eclipses.
When you bring your blankets and you wear your most comfortable clothing and you sit around and you eat some food with your family and you listen to this music.
We talk to curators around Muncie standing in the path of totality.
And after we look to the sky, we put our noses in the books that are popular at the library this month.
Coming up from IPR.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture, and I'm Jen Blackmer.
I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette.
All three of us are here for our 10th episode. How exciting. We're so happy to be joining you today as we prepare for a once-in-a-lifetime experience this weekend.
That's right. We should all be in the same room to talk about the eclipse.
Not just the eclipse, the total eclipse.
It is.
And it's going to be a total weekend of eclipse activities.
You're absolutely right, Kara.
IPR's Phil Hoffman found Trenton Bush, marketing director at Destination Muncie, and he's been really busy making final plans and preparations for this eclipse weekend.
I'm joined right now by Trenton Bush, who is the marketing director at Destination Muncie here in Muncie. Welcome, Trenton.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we're here today to talk a little bit about this event that's coming up pretty soon. And everybody probably by this point listening knows that there's going to be a total eclipse here in our region. But you all at Destination Muncie started with the city and some other folks more than a year ago to prep for this, right?
Absolutely, yeah. For a while, I was joking that we were going to bring tinfoil hats because, you know, people just didn't even believe us that something like this was happening. You know, at the county fair, we had a booth and we're, you know, just informational. And people were telling us, no thanks. Like, it's going to happen. So I'm glad that it's here. I've had a couple dreams about it lately, so I feel like it's right there at the top of my psyche. I'm ready to get this one over with.
Now, this is one of those events, you know, it was really interesting because early on, I can remember going to a meeting at the planetarium and you were there and Michelle Owen from the city was there. And it was sort of this presentation talking about at another city years ago where this had happened. And they were sort of talking about the scale of visitors and the scale of the event and everything. And I will admit, Trenton, I'm sitting in the audience like these other folks thinking, there's no way it's going to be this big.
Yeah.
But it sounds like from what I'm hearing as we get a little bit nearer from the hotel perspective, from the entertainment perspective, there's going to be a lot of people here in town, right?
Yeah, we're expecting anywhere from 150 to 200,000 non-users. So that's not even counting the people who live here that's going to come into that bandwidth of the totality, you know. So that's a lot. The state has projected 3.9 million. That's a lot of people. And we're ready for them, though. So we've got a lot of events and a lot of, you know, just our normal mom and pop restaurants, they're all gearing up. So I think we're ready to receive the guests.
Well, and certainly, you know, if you pay any attention to social media, you see things circulating about what hotel rooms are going for that weekend. Mm-hmm. So surprising numbers for what you would expect to see normally here in our region.
And it happened really quickly. It was like, you know, it was like a few people came to the party and then suddenly it was like, we're booking up, we're booked. Yeah, so right. We're excited to see that. Even if we just count the hotels, that's quite a few people here in town.
Now, folks that are listening, they may not be familiar with Destination Muncie, partly because that's a recent rebrand.
It is.
But also, they just may not know what you all do. Can you kind of describe what the mission of Destination Muncie is?
So we're a traditional CVB, which is a visitors bureau. But we decided to, you know, give it a little bit more modern take and a little bit more modern name. Not that we're still not going to have your maps and your pamphlets and the information about what's going on, but we want to be more of a marketing agency. Our DMO is the new, you know, destination marketing organization. So we want to be able to push that message out and really just tell everybody what was going on in Muncie, but not more of a calendar, but all the exciting things that, you know, institutions like a Minatrista or even what you fine folks are doing. You know, we just want to make sure that everybody knows that there's a lot going on here. And that's even our tagline is you've got to see this.
Now, for this event coming up, which is April 8th, in case you somehow magically missed it, you would think, okay, well, all right, people are going to be here. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They'll come in Monday morning. They'll watch it in the afternoon and leave. But that's not what's going to happen here in Muncie. There's a whole ton of events that have been coordinated. Do you want to kind of walk through? Because it starts well before the day of the event.
Absolutely.
The actual eclipse.
So really, it starts on that Thursday. So traditionally, first Thursdays in Muncie are always an arts-themed downtown. And so we are going to continue with that. So that'll be kind of like for everybody in the city or in the area to come down to, you know, downtown and check out what the different things that could be happening in the next couple of days. So there'll be information for sure. You can always come to the Visitors Bureau or Destination Muncie and grab your t-shirts and do all that early before the crowd comes. So that's Thursday night. On Friday, then, we're going to have kind of a welcome to the city at 4 o'clock at Cameron Commons. The mayor's supposed to speak. My boss, Kevin Kirby, he's going to speak. And then also Angie from downtown. So they'll be able to, you know, kind of just tee up what's going on for the weekend for everybody coming in. Then the big day starts on Saturday. So we have a maker's market at the Delaware County Fairgrounds, and that's going to be from 10 to 6. And then also from 2 to, I always say 4, from 2 to 6, we're going to have a beer fest at Cornerstone Center for the Arts, which will also be a version of the Maker's Market there. Then at 4 o'clock at Cornerstone, there's the Music Fest, and it is from then to midnight, and we have 12 local bands going to join and, you know, have a great music festival and really have that kind of indoor feel to, just in case for weather, of course. Then also, there's a dance party at Cornerstone that evening, and it's going to be great. So if whatever kind of music you like, we're going to have that covered for that day. Then on Sunday, we'll also have a Maker's Mark. And then I think you're involved with this Sunday. So if you want to talk about what's going on there, that'd be wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
So as you know, Trenton, the folks at Orchestra Indiana and Minnetrista got together and planned, as part of the events leading up to this, to have a concert, a special concert on the grounds of Minnetrista, but outdoors, we hope, April 7th, who knows, right? But they're going to have a concert that's going to be sort of this solar-themed, eclipse-themed kind of concert.
Right.
And so, you know, you and I go to these monthly meetings, and I happen to overhear the two of those folks talking about it, saying, oh, we're going to do this concert. And so the next thing you know, we are now broadcasting it live. And then there are several other stations through the state that are along the path of totality. So the folks at Evansville and Vincennes have agreed to pick up the program. So we're actually going to be bringing the concert, Muncie and Orchestra Indiana and Minnetrista, to people all across the state when we produce this concert. So we're excited about having the partnership. And I thank you and thank the folks at the city and Minnetrista and Orchestra Indiana for making this all happen. It's really exciting.
It is exciting. It's the only statewide event. And so that's really cool as far as, you know, kudos to us, because it really is a collaborative effort. It's really bringing all those together, which, again, was a point of some of those luncheons that we go to. So it feels good that we're putting, you know, our money where our mouth is as far as getting these kind of things together. And really, it's just about everybody. So we're inviting everybody to come, you know, experience the orchestra that maybe weren't able to before. And then also, you know, for you guys being able to broadcast it, we're putting it in your living room. So it's going to be great. I really think that that's going to be one of the high points of the weekend.
Yeah, we're excited about it. Of course, as you mentioned earlier, there's a sort of a rock band focus thing the day before. Yep. So there's all sorts of things going on. And then, of course, we get to Monday, which is the big day.
The big day.
Can you talk a little bit about how that day is going
to
go?
Sure. Again, we have 4 viewing sites. So you can go to AMA. So that's towards the south side. And then out to Prairie Creek Reservoir, too. They'll have zip lines and carnival kind of esque rides for you to enjoy with your whole family. And then back in town, you can go to the Delaware County Fairgrounds. There also have some activities, some food trucks. So, and then if you want to stay downtown, there's several areas you can see, but where the main focus is going to be at Cannon Commons. And that's going to be kind of your low-key, as far as that more mellowed out kind of not the blaring music. Maybe there's some acoustic guitars and some drum circles, but it's not going to be quite as loud and vibrant for those people who just want to take in the more spiritual side of the experience. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be really exciting as well. I think Cheryl from downtown's really done a good job putting that together.
So obviously, Trenton, this doesn't happen, even though it's themed magic, right?
It is.
But this doesn't happen by magic. Can you describe a little bit about the teamwork behind the scenes that has made this all come to pass?
I think that's the key word right there, is teamwork. It really has been from Michelle, from the city, and you know, myself and my office, to you guys. I mean, really, any organization that you can think of in Muncie has really kind of had their chip in to make this all happen. And it's been really good from my side. It's made my job hectic, but it's also been very easy because everybody's really wanted to contribute and really, you know, we want to see the magic in Muncie come together, and that's how it happens, is with all of us in it.
So for folks that are listening right now and they couldn't remember all of the things that you said, where do they go to find the schedule and the information for the weekend?
You want to go to eclipsemuncie.com, and there you can buy your merch. You can get, obviously, your schedules. All the details will be there. Now, I mentioned the four main sites too, but there are also a listing of the other, you know, things happening in Muncie, because there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of things that you'll be able to participate in, whether it's education or, again, like something like the Beer Fest. You want to relax and let your hair down a little bit. We'll have you covered. And it'll be really a fun, safe time. You know, the county sheriff's office and the Muncie police are all involved, as far as we're really going to have a great time for everybody to come have a safe, great experience for the eclipse.
Well, certainly hats off to you and the folks at the Destination Muncie for bringing this together, and the city.
Absolutely.
It really feels like a very cohesive, coordinated effort. So hats off to you all for doing that. I just have one request for the next eclipse.
Okay.
Can you not make it in April? Could you just make it like in May or June?
You know, it might be nice, right?
We feel like the weather is more likely to be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, Trenton Bush, again, marketing director from Destination Muncie. Thank you for being here, Trenton. We'll see everybody the weekend of April 8th.
Yeah, come out and see us.
And that was IPR's Phil Hoffman. I'm Jen Blackmer.
I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. And we're talking about what we will do on Eclipse Weekend.
It's exciting to be in Muncie during this time for this really once-in-a-lifetime event.
Absolutely. I cannot wait.
Me neither. And we're all wearing glasses. I don't know. Yeah. You know, we're on the radio. But
that's right.
If you can just imagine the three of us here, all of us looking super cool in our eclipse glasses.
Yes. Yeah, it makes it a little hard to read the information, but that's okay. We'll wing it.
Well, and that's the point, right? Safety first.
That's right. You can't prepare too early, Jen.
You really can't. And I've been walking around with my eclipse glasses bumping into things all week. As Kara said, there are a ton of wonderful events happening here in Muncie to celebrate the total solar eclipse, and we will be sharing those with you.
One of the things I'm most excited about, Jen, is your play, A Golden Curve of Light.
Yes.
I don't want to be self-serving, but yes. There's a play.
Yes, I have a production, as a matter of fact.
A production of a brand new... Actually, it's a world premiere of a new one-act play. It was commissioned by Minnetrista Museum and Gardens by their amazing theater and performance team out there. And I've been working with them off and on over the years. And Kirsten Novotny approached me with this idea about creating a piece of theater surrounding the eclipse. And I have been obsessed with Mariah Mitchell as somebody I look up to, but just as an incredible historical figure in the history of women in science and women in academia. And so this is a story about her. She traveled across the country in 1869. There was a total solar eclipse in Burlington, Iowa, and she took some of her students from Vassar Female College, as it was known at the time, across the country to witness this and become the first all-female team to scientifically observe a solar eclipse. And so it's a bit of history, but it's also sort of steeped in present day, which is what I like to do in my work. So we're doing three performances. There's one at Minnetrista on Saturday. There's one on campus at Bell State on Sunday. And then we're back at Minnetrista on the day of.
That is so exciting. I love that. And that is, like Kara just noted, that is on my list of things to do for the eclipse. Also planning on the Muncie Music Fest and the Muncie Brew Fest. And the little dance party that they're having at Cornerstone as part of both of those shindigs. So, yeah, super excited. Oh, and then Sunday, the big Orchestra Indiana concert.
That's right. I can't wait for that.
Oh, my gosh. So many things. So much fun. Be sure to take advantage of at least some of these great and pre-eclipse
Orchestra
activities.
Indiana is doing a cosmically themed
yes.
A selection of pieces that day. So that'll be amazing to experience some outdoor orchestral music with your friends and family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And there's more music happening on the outside edge of Muncie, near Eaton, Meg's Country Celebrations. They're going to have a lot of music and art and yoga and dance.
Wonderful.
And running, and Long Haul Paul will be there.
Awesome.
Ooh, we heard him last week on the show. What
we
a
sure
delight.
Did.
Yes. What a delight he is. There are so many things to do. In fact, there are even nature programs.
Like what,
about
Michelle?
The eclipse. Well, producer Luke Jones spoke to Erica Oliver, who's coordinating an event about the eclipse and nature.
Hi there. My name is Erica Oliver, and I am the Environmental Education and Greenhouse Coordinator here at Ball State University.
Thank you, Erica. I want to ask about this event that you have coming up on Saturday, but first, I have never met a greenhouse coordinator. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So I wear two different hats. The main hat is the environmental education. I provide environmental education experiences for all ages, pre-K to 12th grade, for field trips who come to campus and want to learn more about our environment. I also work with Ball State students in classes, and I work with public organizations like Master Gardener and Audubon, and then just the general public. Anyone can come on in into Christie Woods, the greenhouses, or the Environmental Education Center, which we have nicknamed the Nature Lab, to come in and learn. On the greenhouse coordinating side, I am currently overseeing the Dr. Renard Orchid Greenhouse until we hire a new greenhouse curator. And I just kind of help with the behind the scenes staffing and watering and things like that. And I also work with our friends group and our volunteers.
So when I was prepping for this interview, I was talking to a couple of my coworkers, and it feels like the greenhouse is sort of hidden away. So can you tell me where you are and what all there is to see in the greenhouse?
Sure. So the Dr. Joe and Alice Renard Orchid Greenhouse is part of a bigger unit. We are the Ball State Field Station and Environmental Education Center, and we call ourselves FSEEC for short. And we actually manage over 425 acres for conservation, education, and research. Only 17 of those acres are on campus, and that is Christie Woods, and the greenhouses and the Environmental Education Center are part of that parcel of 17 acres. Mm-hmm. We are kind of hidden away. We're on the edge of campus at University in Tillotson. We're right across the street from the hospital. You just pull in between the soccer fields, and we've got visitor parking right outside the greenhouse. So visitors can come on in. We're completely free, and they can take a walk or a stroll through the greenhouse. They can walk their dog or do anything outdoor oriented in the woods. And they can come into the classroom to see our animals and our beehive and learn more about the things that we do here.
Okay, we've mentioned this event that's happening on Saturday in coordination with the eclipse. I believe mm-hmm. it is called literally Nature and the Solar Eclipse. Can you talk yes. a little bit about what's happening?
Sure. So from 10 to 3 on Saturday, those are our normal open hours. We will be having our Nature and the Solar Eclipse event. And it's a family-friendly event. It's a walk-in. Come in and spend as much time as you would like. And basically, we know everyone's probably not sick of hearing about the eclipse, but everyone's going to be learning the same thing about the eclipse everywhere they go this weekend. Mm-hmm. They're going to learn what an eclipse is, what the path of totality is, things like that, which is amazing and valuable. Me and my students were looking at it. It's like, what could we do that's a little different? And one thing that there's just not a lot of public knowledge about is how wildlife respond to eclipses. I've seen a lot of stuff on social media just this week of keep your pets indoors, close all the windows, the eclipse is going to drive them crazy. I don't know that that's true. Huh. I don't know that there's even enough data to know that. So we started doing some research, some reading papers that we could find about how plants and animals respond to eclipses. And there's not as much data on that as you might think. Eclipses are a relatively common occurrence, mm-hmm. but they occur across the entire world. There's almost never the same path twice, as far as I can tell. And plants and animals in this location will vary in their response from how they respond in another location. Or is it cloudy that day and we couldn't even get any data? Like, there's just so much we don't know. So what we wanted to do was basically review all the data that we could find on how plants and animals tend to respond and boil that down in a family-friendly way. So we will have stations set up throughout the Nature Lab where visitors can go and learn about the typical behavior of that creature, and then how it might change on the day of the eclipse, because we don't 100% know for sure, but we've got some pretty good guesses based on the research we've done. So, for example, our beehive, all the research we could find indicated that insects tend to respond as if it's nighttime. They see it getting dark, so they go back to their hive. So what we're going to focus on for that station is the waggle dance that bees do. Are you familiar with that?
I am, yes.
Okay. So just for anybody who doesn't know, the waggle dance is how bees communicate with each other. They do this wiggling dance. They rotate in an infinity symbol or a figure eight, and they shake in the middle of it. The direction of that shaking tells other bees, hey, fly in this direction relative to the sun to find the flowers I just went to. Well, if there's no sun, they can't make a map. So we're expecting to see our bees return to our hive as if it was nighttime on the day of the eclipse. So we'll have stations like that on honeybees, on songbirds. We're going to have a scavenger hunt out in Christie Woods for what wildflowers are present in April at this time. And on the scavenger hunt, we'll have little markers of this plant closes at night. It might close during the eclipse because a lot of our flowers do that this time of year. They'll close up at night or on cloudy days to keep their nectar from evaporating. So our plants might do that in response to the eclipse. So it's something to maybe keep an eye out for while you're waiting for the sun to fully get covered to look to take your glasses off. Look at the plants. See what they're doing in response.
I really love that you keep saying it might do this, or this is what we think will happen, because it sounds like there really is quite little data.
It is wild to me. I mean, humans have been around for so long, but there's still so much we don't know. Going back to the flowers, I found a paper from 2017. It was the last total eclipse that came over the U.S. And it was a citizen science project through iNaturalist. They asked people to record their observations of plants and animals around them. There was one example in that paper of a hibiscus species. There's a bunch of different ones in that group. This person was able to take pictures of it closing during the eclipse. That was the only photo evidence I could find. Wow. And I can't say I read every single paper in the world, but I read quite a lot of them. Sure. And that is fascinating to me, that there are questions that are visible with the naked eye that we don't know. So actually, the day of the eclipse, we will be setting up some GoPros on the hive and on some flowers to see if we see any responses of our bees and of any of the flowers in our properties. And hopefully we'll find something. We might not. I can't promise it, because that's how science works.
Yep.
How nature doesn't always do what we want it to do. And who knows? It might rain the day of the eclipse. It's Indiana. But fingers crossed it does not. But we're hopeful that we'll get to see something really, really cool.
Well, and that was my next question, was how are you going to watch the eclipse and observe nature at the same time? And I like that you're setting up GoPros so you can look back at the footage, and I would assume also go put your eclipse glasses on and stare up at the sky, hopefully.
100%. We will actually, we're doing this event on Saturday. We will be closed the day of the eclipse so that our staff and students can enjoy the experience along with everybody else. So I will be setting up those cameras ahead of time, and then we'll just see what we find. That'll be really, awesome. Really neat. I'm very excited to get to look at it afterwards.
I think we're going to have you back on to tell us what you found, because now I'm too invested. I need to know what happens to the flowers and to the bees.
I can definitely send you an update for sure.
Thank you.
And we can always do more of this if you want to.
This event on Saturday, it's from 10 to 3. I know it's a family-friendly event. Is it better for certain ages, or is it all ages?
It is open to all ages. We try very hard to have our activities kind of shoot for the middle of the road, where some things are more appropriate for little, some are more appropriate for adults. So we will have some hands-on activities that are meant for littles, but the scavenger hunt and the information that we share just talking to visitors will be for all ages. So everyone is always welcome, and we hope that everybody gets to enjoy their experience here.
Amazing. Is there anything else that you want to mention about the event or about the greenhouse that we haven't got to?
So it is on a Saturday, so parking will be free. We have parking right outside. Park in any spot in the parking lot that doesn't say staff parking. otherwise, I don't think there's really anything else about that event. I did want to let you know that we do have two other events in April coming up.
Okay.
Actually, three. I lied. One is just April 16th is National Orchid Day. We're just open that day. It's a weekday, but we will be giving out free orchigami sets to anybody who wants one. It's a sheet of paper that has a bunch of little punch-out parts, and you can make your own paper orchid to take home. And we have a bunch of different ones that people can choose from, and that's completely free. But otherwise, we're just open that day. The other two are full events. April 20th, we'll be celebrating Earth Day, and we'll be have a bunch of tables from partnering organizations and from Ball State student classes and clubs. And they'll be providing activities all about just planet Earth and why we should care about it. And April 27th, also from 10 to 3, is our annual plant sale and fundraiser. So all proceeds go back towards our environmental education programmings so that we don't have to charge for the things that we do. Sure. And we'll have orchids and houseplants and succulents and a lot of other cool stuff for sale.
And it's things that have, I guess what I would say, started in the greenhouse and then you kind of
Most of them. Yes.
Okay. All right. Erica Oliver, Environmental Education and Greenhouse Coordinator here on the campus of Ball State. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for reaching out to us. We really appreciate the, helping spread the word. We really like people getting to come see our spaces and enjoy the plants and animals we have here.
I'm Luke Jones.
I'm Michelle Kinsey.
I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. And we're the team that brings you Pop of Culture every week. On Sunday, April 7th, Orchestra Indiana will perform Eclipsed, a magical night of music at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. The concert will air in coordination with Ball State Public Media and our own Phil Hoffman, who's really been running around this week. Spoke to Katie Morgan Perez with the orchestra and Brian Stotz with Minnetrista.
Joining us now is Katie Morgan Perez. Katie is the executive director with Orchestra Indiana. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And Brian Stotz, who's the president and CEO of Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Phil. Good to be here.
For folks who are maybe new to the community or aren't familiar with Minnetrista, can you talk a little bit about sort of the kind of things that happen here and the purpose?
Absolutely. So Minnetrista was established by the Ball family, and our campus is basically the site where the five Ball brothers set up their homes in the turn of the 19th to 20th century, and they continued their glass and jar factory production. The property stayed in the family for decades and continues to this day. And they set this museum up in 1988 to be a repository for not only their family and company history, but also the history of East Central Indiana. And not just, you know, the typical things that you would think of with history, but people who lived here, whether they were, you know, big and famous at the time, like the Ball family was, or they just worked here, or, you know, just made an impact in their families or community. And it's something where I think everybody can find a little bit to relate to as they walk our grounds or look at our galleries. We have four galleries in our building itself, our main building, and then we have exhibition galleries in two of our historic homes, the L.L. Ball home where Bob Ross painted for a number of years before moving to your campus, Phil, and also the Oakhurst home where George and Francis and Betty Ball lived, and we kind of recreate a little bit of what the home looked like for them. So there's, you know, bits and pieces for, I think, everybody to enjoy, but what we really want is for people to just come and forget about their lives for a minute or an hour or a day and just kind of take it in, you know, take in some culture, forget about the world for a while, enjoy time with family and friends, and have a good time.
So, Kate, let's talk a little bit. It's hard to attract audiences just in general to live performances, period, no matter what your performance is. But then also you're seeing a change in audience tastes to some degree. And so you're thinking about, like, how do we diversify the kinds of music we play? You want to keep your existing audience, but you also need to find folks who will be there for you and grow the audience. So how do you balance that from your perspective?
That's really the center of everything we're talking about right now as an organization is, yes, we want to continue to provide these orchestra concerts that the community is accustomed to, right? But we want to grow the audience for that. And perhaps the easiest way to do that is to be providing little opportunities to experience like a taste of the orchestra all over the place. For instance, we did the Yorktown Farmers Market. We've participated in the teacher appreciation event at Minnetrista. Those are the ways that we can start to maybe more deeply engage in the community in a one-on-one and And like you're being able to come physically into contact with the musicians in a way that's different than entering into a large performance venue, sitting in your seats, watching them on stage, they leave, you leave, and there's no real close experience with that. I think that is the future of how Orchestra Indiana succeeds. And it's my goal to see where and how we can create those opportunities all over the communities that we serve.
Now, speaking of opportunities like that, we have a big one coming up, coinciding sort of with the big eclipse event. The day before the actual eclipse, you all are doing something pretty large.
We sure are. You know, I, in my own life, I am really focused on providing opportunities for experiences and making memories with my family and my children. And so on Sunday evening, April 7th at 5 p.m. at Minnetrista, Orchestra Indiana will present Eclipsed, A Night of Music. And that in my mind, I envisioned as being this really fun, I really, really value fun, and really fun thing for all ages to come and do, where there's food trucks and you can engage with the local arts and culture organizations and you bring your blankets and you wear your most comfortable clothing and you sit around and you eat some food with your family and you listen to this music. And it just is a way to celebrate this once in a lifetime event with your people, and a way for the orchestra maybe to be exposed to an entirely new population of future audience members.
Certainly going to be a big day, a big weekend, really, when you think about all the things that are happening here in the Muncie area. And regardless of the concert, I imagine that Minnetrista will probably be booming that whole weekend, right?
Yes, that's the plan. We are partnering with the Muncie Children's Museum and others to put on some family-friendly programs. We will have a play written by Jen Blackmer on our campus that's related to the eclipse and some history there. But we want to do our part, as the rest of Muncie is doing their part, to just make it a weekend where everybody can have a good time, learn about the eclipse, experience the eclipse, of course. And whether you're a Muncie resident or you live just outside or you're traveling to Muncie for this, I think the city and the Visitors Bureau and really the entire arts community has done a great job in setting up a menu of things that will keep folks informed and entertained really that entire weekend, all the way up through the eclipse itself. We, weather permitting, will be very proud to host Orchestra Indiana and your organization on our campus.
Now, you and I have had this conversation a lot.
We have. We have quite a bit.
The early April weather could potentially, right? Tell me, what is your projection for what the weather is going to be on April?
Well, you know, I have spent a lot of time manifesting that is going to be one of those absolutely breathtakingly beautiful days in East Central Indiana. I'm thinking 72, partly cloudy. The tulips on Minnetrista's campus are in full bloom. And it's maybe one of those first Sunday evenings where families are out with their dogs and their children enjoying the weather and enjoying live music. Now, if that is not the case, there are plans to make sure that we can still have this event, and Ball State University is allowing us to utilize Pruis to do that in the event of poor weather. And as, I mean, anyone that is connected with orchestral music in any way knows that really anything 60 degrees or under is not a possibility for the musicians and their instruments, which really are their most important tool that they have. So we will be watching that very closely.
Speaking it into the universe. There you go.
That's right. We are speaking it into the universe.
Well, Katie, thank you for joining us today. We're looking forward to the Eclipsed concert.
From what I have seen, it looks like we will send it off at the end with none other than the Imperial March from Star Wars to lead us into the next day and the big day, which is the actual eclipse. So.
And one of the, am I allowed to say one of the pieces of music you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Favorite, one of my personal favorites is Stardust. So I was excited when I saw that on the list.
Yes, and I'll share a couple of them. There's, of course, going to be Moon River. You Are the Sunshine of My Life. And then as we send off with the Imperial March, there's not any better way we could send off into what Monday brings, which is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Well, thank you, Katie. Talking to you. Brian, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your time. It's Brian Stotz. Please, everyone, if you're tuned in right now, please come see us on April 7th when we have the big concert. We'd love to see you here in person and put you on television. But if you can't make it, we hope you'll watch or listen. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Phil. Always a pleasure.
That was IPR's own Phil Hoffman giving us a preview of Eclipsed, A Magical Night of Music. The concert airs live this Sunday, April 7th at 5 p.m. here on IPR.
I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Joining me is Hannah Elliott, a librarian with the Jay County Public Library. And if you recall, a few podcasts ago, Hannah was on to talk about all of the great things she does at the library. And she was so awesome that we invited her to come back to talk about all of the popular books at the library and some exciting new releases. So welcome back, Hannah.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So let's jump right in. Let's talk about the things that are super popular right now. Yeah. What are some of those titles, Hannah?
Sure. So we are seeing a lot of The Teacher by Freida McFadden. And if you're a Freida McFadden fan, like, she has so many great thrillers that you just don't see the end coming. And so it was highly anticipated for January, and it came out in January, but it's still constantly checking out. So if you are into thrillers or anything by her, you'll definitely want to check that one out. I read it and it's really good. The next one we're seeing a lot of is Bride by Allie Hazelwood. She is a really popular romance author, and this one released right around Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. But again, it's getting read. It's constantly being checked out. There's a holds list.
Wow.
It is her first paranormal romance type of book. So it was a little bit different from her usual, but it has werewolves and vampires and a pretty good storyline, in my opinion. I read that one too. So that one is really popular.
Oh, Hannah, you had me at paranormal. That sounds really interesting.
I know, me too. And, yeah. And I love that. So that's what got me to read it.
Yeah.
So it's really good. And so I don't know if you know, but like Dune just got released,
yes,
the second part of the movie. So of course, people are checking those books out, checking out the first movie, making sure they're in the know and prepared for the second part of it. So those are really popular.
I love that. I love that people are going to the books because of the movie. That's wonderful that they're reading the book. And they're going to find so much more in the books. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I felt that like Dune 1 was pretty good, but there's just so much more in those books and it's a series. So a lot of people are saying you should read the book, obviously, but those are being checked out.
Great.
So the Oppenheimer Barbie movie. So even though that came out and was released last summer and it was kind of like Oppenheimer versus Barbie, it released a few months ago on DVD and we still cannot keep those stocked. Very popular. So if you're interested in any of those, the library has them, which is really cool.
Great.
And I don't know, I'm hearing mixed reviews. Some people are team Oppenheimer, some people are team Barbie. So who knows? It's whatever you like personally. And then the other thing that we're seeing a lot of is our video games, our outdoor games. We have like large outdoor games like of checkers and cornhole and all that stuff.
What?
Yeah, we do. And so we have all these different things. There's so many. It takes too long to list them all. But people are taking those on their spring break trips, and they really go out during summer too. And then regular board games. We have a board game collection. And so you can take any of those and check those out.
I love the whole idea of the outdoor games. I never would have thought that would be a possibility. So if I check out, like, say, cornhole, how long can I keep that game? Like if I'm having a family reunion or a picnic or something.
Yeah. So for us, it's 3 weeks.
Wow.
Which makes it really nice for people going on vacations.
Yeah.
Because then you don't worry about like getting it back. But you definitely want to ask that question when you're checking it out. But yeah. I know we're not the only library that has that type of stuff. So we're probably going to be adding some more this summer. So
that is so cool.
Yeah, we have all kinds of stuff.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to April releases, and you've kind of narrowed it down to kind of some of the big ones, the ones that you're looking forward to in April. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yes. So April is really heavy with all kinds of releases. And it was very hard for me to narrow down because I like so many things, like we talked about in the last interview. Specifically, there's a pizza cookbook coming out that I just am so pumped for. But I tried to figure out some of these that people are going to know the name. So I have about six of the big ones is what I would consider the big releases. So the first one is called The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. It's her first novel. So there's a lot of excitement about that because people have been looking forward to this. So it's called The Husbands. It's basically, she asks the question, how do we navigate life, love, and a choice in a world of never-ending options? You know, with online dating and just different things that we do, they're really, it's a culture that there is a lot of never-ending options, it seems. So she tackles that big question, not in just love, but life and all this stuff. So I think it's going to be a really good book, and I'm excited to read that one. So again, that is The Husbands by Holly Gramazio.
Okay.
The next one is very anticipated. It is by Amor Towles, and it is called Table for Two. It is his new collection of stories, and he's also including a novella featuring one of his most beloved characters from prior books, such as The Lincoln Highway, A Gentleman in Moscow, and Rules of Civility. So if you read any of those books, this is his new first collection of stories. And I'm not going to release, I'm not going to spoil alert which character it is, because if you like those, then you're going to love this. But that's really exciting. So people are looking forward to that one.
Awesome.
Yes. And then there's a new book called Real Americans by Rachel Kong. She is the award-winning author of Goodbye Vitamin. So if you read that, then she has a new book. And I just thought the premise of this book was really intriguing too. And so in Real Americans, she's going to be asking, you know, how far would you go to shape your own destiny? Early critics are saying it's exhilarating and it's, you know, about American identity that spans three generations in one family and ask, you know, what makes us who we are and how inevitable are our futures? So I think that's also going to be a really neat book since it's multi-generational, but also asking some pretty deep questions that I think all of us do question at some point.
Yeah, I'm writing that one down. That sounds really intriguing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is Real Americans by Rachel Kong.
Okay.
So very excited for that one. The next one is The Rulebook by Sarah Adams. And Sarah Adams went viral last year on TikTok for her romance book, The Cheat Sheet. This is the second book. I guess she's making a duology. So this is book two. And basically, the college exes break all the rules when they reunite years later. It's enemies to lovers. So if you love that trope, then that is for you. It's definitely trending in the romance world. So, and if you're on TikTok, I'm sure you've seen this go around. So she's keeping up with that. so that's the rule book. The next one is Salman Rushdie. He is an internationally renowned writer and Booker Prize winner. And this book is totally different from what he's done in the past. And so this one is actually like a memoir style, and it's his personal account of how he survived an attempt of murder on his life 30 years after it was ordered against him. And so he's really telling this personal tale. The critics are saying that it's gripping, intimate, and ultimately life-affirming. It's like a meditation on life, loss, love, art, and finding the strength to, you know, stand up for yourself and move on past something traumatic. So I think that one's going to be really good too, and just totally different from his other books. So if you want to read that one, it's called Knife. And that one will be released later in April. And then the last one that I have that everyone is so excited about is Emily Henry. Her new book, Funny Story, is coming out at the end of April. So she did Beach Read. She did Book Lovers. All of those books are hers. So Emily Henry fans unite, I guess. So it's supposed to be a really...
I believe Luke is one of them, our producer, because he's, every book you mentioned, he's shaking his head. Well, that was quite an eclectic group of books. So something for everybody in that mix, I think, Hannah.
Hoping so. And, you know, I mean, if we get into kids, Dog Man, that is such a popular
graphic. Oh my gosh, yes.
That all the kids love, that's coming out. But I mean, it's so hard to narrow it down because there's constantly so many good books coming out.
Well, we appreciate you attempting to narrow it down for us every month. Hannah Elliott, thank you so much again for joining us, and we'll see you next month for the book club.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it's time for this week's arts calendar, which is filled with Eclipse events. Here's more of a recap. We've been talking about this a lot this week.
Yes.
Magic City Brewfest is 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday, April 6th at Cornerstone Center for the Arts. Enjoy craft beer, wine, distillery offerings, and more. Details at eclipsemuncie.com.
The Magic City Music Fest is 4 p.m. to midnight Saturday, April 6th at Cornerstone Center for the Arts. The event will feature music from more than 15 bands and performers and a dance party. Tickets and more at eclipsemuncie.com.
Eclipsed, a magical evening of music, will be 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, April 7th at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. The free outdoor concert will feature Orchestra Indiana. Minnetrista.net is the place to go for all their Eclipse activities.
Muncie Makers Market is celebrating Eclipse Weekend with dozens of makers and live music Saturday through Monday, April 6th through 8th at the Delaware County Fairgrounds. Music starts at 11 a.m. April 6th and includes performances by the Prairie Creek Sirens, Ashley Gray, and Jerry Barker, among others.
And A Golden Curve of Light, a play about the eclipse written by our own multi-talented co-host, Jennifer Blackmer, will be performed at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 6th at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens, at 2:30 p.m. Sunday, April 7th at Ball State University's Brown Family Amphitheater, and at 1 p.m. Monday, April 8th at Minnetrista.
If you have an out-of-this-world event to share with Pop of Culture listeners, let us know at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
That's it for this week. This far-out 10th episode of Pop of Culture was produced by Luke Jones, whose eclipse plans include a well-deserved nap at about 3 p.m. and hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And Jen Blackmer.
And Kira Duquette.
Special thanks this week go to our own Phil Hoffman, who's turned in lots and lots of mileage receipts.
Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the beautiful campus of Ball State University.